Hi everyone and welcome back to Memcast. My name is Dr. Rachel Saville and I'll be your host today. I've got the pleasure of reintroducing Dr. Akhlaq Chowdhury, who's one of our respiratory consultants and Deputy Medical Director for Quality and Safety at the University Hospitals of Derby and Burnton. Last time we spoke to Dr. Chowdhury, we talked about how to get started on a QI project and got some really practical advice on who you need to involve in terms of your team members, stakeholders, and ways of getting a mentor or supervision sorted. Today, we're going to be talking about what stages there are in a quality improvement project, PDSA cycles, and we're also going to signpost you to some useful resources. So, hi, and welcome back to Memcast, Dr. Chowdhury. So I guess when we are about to take on our quality improvement project, we've now got team all set up. What steps are there to actually doing a quality improvement project, and do we always have to do all of the steps?
Not all improvements are complex, so if there's something quick to fix it, right? Don't go and start writing out a huge project plan and all the rest of it. It's not that particularly useful. This is often used in industry, actually. So the process that is used in industry is improving every day. And we sometimes call that continuous improvement. Essentially, if something goes wrong, you stop the line, if it's car manufacturing, stop the line, fix the problem, and then carry on the line. But when it's a slightly more complex problem, a multifactorial problem, let's just say introducing a new sepsis pathway in ED, it's slightly more complex because there's multiple people involved, there's multiple stages in that process, there's multiple inputs that are required, whether it's oxygen delivery, blood cultures, and so forth. You do need to break it up. And the way I would see it is that there are five stages. The first one is to identify the right problem. And to make sure that you've identified the right problem, you need to ask people. You need to get some background data to say, am I really looking at the right problem here? So for example, if you find that you've been spending a lot of time managing sepsis in the resus area, but actually it takes an hour to get to resus in the first place because the triage system isn't working quite right, then you've not identified the right problem as an example. Try and pick programs of work that are linked to the departmental priorities and the trust priorities if you can as well. So not just something that's all your pet interest, and just be aware. And if it is your pet interest, make sure that it's relevant to your department. What I would say that you should be personally motivated to do this because it interests you, but also it needs to have what I call high capital gain. So something that is going to make a true difference to that department and organization. And that's where the sponsor comes back in. After you've identified the problem and you've decided you're going to go with this, you're then going to try and understand the problem. So that means you're going to talk to patients, you're going to talk to staff, you might do a baseline survey, you may collect some baseline data, you might try to see if there's been any complaints and so forth, if this has happened before. Is it something that you need to understand because a new NICE guidance is coming? So there's quite a few elements to that. And sometimes we identify with specific tools. I'm not going to go through tools today because they're kind of blogs in themselves. But this is where you may use a fishbone diagram to identify all the causes towards a problem. And sometimes it's useful to also map out the problem with little sort of boxes and arrows pointing from start to end. So these are some of the things that we can use. Once you've identified the problem, you can then go and start designing. So this is the fun bit, if you like, the bit that people get a bit excited about and say, right, what's the big ideas that we can try to get this forward? And it's important that you do this all in order, because if you start designing before understanding, then invariably you're going to be doing the wrong thing. So you may decide, for example, that you're going to change the sepsis pro forma example. Here, sometimes we map it out visually in something called a driver diagram. But other than the change ideas, it's also important to measure. So you need to decide how you're going to know that things are better. So you're going to do some measurements at baseline and then continue measuring through that process. But measuring is something that has to be thought through, and it's about making sure you've set yourself a clear understanding that they've got to be smart measures, specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. But when it comes to your aim, and this is a really important part in designing, is that you've got to be within scope, if you like. You can't make it too broad that it's just so wide and unwieldy that you're never going to get to wherever you want to get to. So it's about what you want to change, by how much, where and when. So for example, I want to increase the number of early morning discharges on Ward 402 by 25% by the end of April 2024. Captures all of those elements and tells everyone else, right, I know where this is happening, I know when it's got to get done by and what I'm changing. And important to measure. The big difference between audit and measurement in quality improvement is that you don't measure many things. You only measure four or five things. And you're not worried about demographics. You're not worried about the gender and so forth. But you measure those things again and again and again, and you try to track them over time. Once you've designed, you deliver through PDSA. And I think I might just talk about PDSA slightly separately at this point. And there is another, I think, quite commonly used sort of, shall we say, framework that leads up to that plan, do, study, act, or PDSA. And it's the model for improvement. I'm sure you've probably heard of it, Rachel, over your time. But it's interesting how many people haven't, or they've kind of notionally heard of it, but doesn't really get, you don't necessarily get the meaning. There are just the three questions. And the first question is the most important. What are you trying to achieve? What we just described earlier about that ward example, you know, deciding what you really want to do. Then you need to measure, and you measure by knowing, you know, what are the changes that will make that improvement? So you do that by measurement. And then the ideas themselves is the third part. So those three questions. So what are we trying to achieve? How we know that the change is an improvement? That's done through measurement. And what changes can be made? And if you answer them in the right way, you won't go wrong. So if, for example, if you lead with your change idea, I will improve Ward 402's discharge before midday by introducing an early morning pro forma. Okay, that's my change idea, and I put it into my aim. And then you find that early morning pro forma hasn't worked, or you've got nowhere to go because you've just put that in your main program of work. So it's really important that your change ideas don't become your aim. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it can be really hard to start with that part. So not coming to the project with a change idea already, I think you need to take that step back and really start exploring the problem and dissecting other parts of it rather than just coming with a solution.
Exactly right, Rachel. So if that pro forma didn't work, well, that's fine. You've learned from it. And then you said, well, actually, that didn't work. But I found out that, you know, doing the morning huddle in the morning and explaining all the discharges kind of seemed to might have worked, and I might try that next time. So it allows you the scope to fail quickly and then learn. And that's the objective. When you're measuring, and the main output of quality improvement, which again is different, there's no statistical tests. There's no sort of, P is less than 0.05. So there's none of that. It's all about measuring over time and plotting it over time. And then you measure at the beginning before you start. And then hopefully either things go up or down, depending what you need, and they will sustain at that level. Now, if, for example, just to give an example of this, if you measure something at baseline 20 times, you will have a good understanding of what your median baseline is. And then if it goes up, and if you get 7 values above that level consistently, the chances of that happening statistically actually is really, really small. It's 1 in 128. So that's better than P is less than 0.05. So the run chart is actually quite a powerful tool. There are more sophisticated tools such as SPC charts that look at variations, statistical process control charts. But that, I'm just letting you know that if you wanted to learn a bit more about measurement. And then finally, sustaining. That is a real challenge, isn't it? I mean, especially when you're moving away every 4 months or 6 months. And there are a number of things that you could do for sustaining, such as system changes, you know, changing the way the IT system work, putting in a new, shall we say, stroke portfolio pathway, putting your new improvements into staff induction, re-auditing, as we mentioned before, handing over to designated staff, making sure there are senior people who are bought into the improvement, who are there longer than you are, or just sharing and collaborating with others. So there's quite a number of ways you could potentially sustain, all right? But what I say the best way of sustaining is make sure you start with your team. If you start alone, you will end alone. And I think that's really a key message for me, is to do that. We mentioned about PDSA, didn't we, a bit earlier? And I think it's a good time just to go over this shortly. So PDSA is the bit. So you've decided on your change ideas. What do you do? So it's a 4-step process which cycles again and again and again. And I'm not going to go through the detail of it, but if I just say that the plan is essentially making that plan and writing it down and making sure you're very, very clear of all the steps of that plan, okay, so that it's reproducible. If someone else read your plan, they will know exactly what you did and could do it themselves. So make sure that's there. But very importantly, you need to predict. If you don't make a prediction, you can't learn. So if I said to you that putting a pro forma to check at 12:30 during the daytime that the discharges have happened and that's your plan, but I predict that every discharge will happen before 12:30, but actually only 50% happened, then you start querying what happened to the other 50%. So if you don't put a prediction, there's nothing to inquire against. Then is the do. So the do is kind of like, well, that sounds simple, isn't it? You just go and do it. All right. You may collect some data during the time, but it's also important to observe during that time and also ask others for their opinion about what happened during the doing phase. The bit that I think sometimes gets skipped very often is the studying. So studying is not you on your own in a room. It's a group meeting of all the people involved in your improvement coming together and saying, right, that was our plan. Did we follow our plan through in the doing phase? Did it meet our prediction or was there a gap? And if there is a gap, why did that gap happen? And what is our measurements telling us over time? You know, did things go better, worse? Is there a trend of things improving or things getting worse? And from that, you can then decide what to do after the study phase into the act phase. Now, in act is really simple. There's only three things you can do. Okay, you can adopt it completely. That was brilliant. All worked fantastically well. Nothing to do here. Let's get on. Okay, so you can adopt it fully. In most cases, you'll adapt it. Say, you know, that was great, but I think there's more work to be done. And then finally, you say that was a complete disaster, a bit like the mini budget. Okay, abandon that. Let's start again. And just be aware that you don't need to necessarily do one idea PDSA at a time. You can have multiple PDSAs running. So for example, let's say antimicrobial stewardship, you may have a PDSA ramp about education improvements. Another one about changing the IT system to make sure that there is something that tells you at 48 hours you need to look. So I think hopefully that was a very quick run through a PDSA. It's a deliberate, purposeful thing. You can do PDSAs very quickly over minutes, or it could take you over a week. What I would say to you, though, is do not miss any of the steps. And classically, people go from plan straight to act without observing the doing and definitely not doing the studying. And please keep a record. Okay, people like measuring, you know, numbers, but they don't keep a record of their PDSAs. So imagine you're a scientist. You will keep a record of your experiments. PDSAs are exactly that. Eventually, enough PDSAs will get you to your aim. So you'll get to your aim, but you won't know how you got there, because that's what the whole fun of PDSA is. You will get there eventually from learning, failing and succeeding.
Absolutely. And quality improvement itself is a massive topic. There's so much more we could talk about today. So if people did want to find out a little bit more about quality improvement, what resources and things are out there for them?
Yeah, so I agree, Rachel. So I think quality improvement and improvement learning is a lifelong learning event. It's a lot to do with mindset, and you've got to have a growth mindset. You can't have a fixed idea of how the world works. You've got to be curious. And that curiosity, I hope, has encouraged you to go and do other things. So there are a wealth of resources. So we can start with some local promotion, if you don't mind. But you know, if you want to go onto Twitter, you can look at hashtag QI Twitter to find out all the people that are involved in QI, not just myself, but anyone. So hashtag QI Twitter. I'm on at Aklaksi, A-K-L-A-K-C. Okay, if you want to follow me. We also have our own website, www.quipstart.com. And again, there's some Twitter at Quipstart as well. And we have our own animated bite-sized QI course that kind of reflects a bit of the discussion that we've had today, but with a bit more detail, very short 5-minute videos, but there's a series of 25 of them. If you want to look at other resources, NHS Elect website, which you should be free if you belong to the NHS. They have a number of webinars and you can pick and choose which webinars are on. I suggest that you can link in with them as well. Don't forget your local support, really important, okay, in your trust, because that's your first port of call and they will have the resources on the website and other things. And in the wider domain, I myself are a member of the Q community. So if you type in Q community, you will see and you can search for people who have got a quality interest in your organization. And if you have a deep interest in quality improvement and it's something that you want to do long term, you can even apply to be a member. Be aware that there is a medical care driving change at Royal College of Physicians, and they are now supporting a lot of the quality improvement work, and RCPQI also has a place too. For the wider learning, there's the Institute of Healthcare Improvement, which is based in the US, and there's a number of resources there. Faculty of Medical Leadership, Virginia Mason, if you want to learn things about lean and so forth. And finally, NHS Improvement, which has a number of these tools and so forth on there. Be mindful about learning tools without understanding why you need them. That's the one thing I would say. So it's amazing how many people talk about tools and talk about jargon. Quality improvement is not about jargon. It's about doing the right thing for your patients. And also, I would say just finally, be aware of your intrinsic and extrinsic motivations for doing improvement work. If you're doing improvement work because it's a sign off for your ARCP, then you're probably doing it for the wrong reason. Okay. That doesn't mean to say that you shouldn't be focusing on that, but it's just a case that this is really important. I'm not going to get this done in 4 months, but I will do aspects of this and I will do it well so that the person I hand over to in 4 to 6 months' time will carry that program on. Now, if there's three of you involved in that program of work over the year, great. All three of you will take equal credit for it and you will have a far better piece of work because you work with a multidisciplinary team. So hand over work that you think is going to be longer than 4 months, which many programs of work are, and some are for many years. So this is something that we're going to be, you know, shall we say, evolving over the next few years to make sure that extrinsic motivation of career progression is not confused with the intrinsic motivation of bettering patient care and patient experience.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you so much for today, Dr. Chowdhury. I hope our listeners have found that useful and can use it in their own quality improvement work. And what I'll do is link some of those resources you mentioned in our Instagram page at mem.cast. And I'll also put it in the description for the podcast so that people can find them a little bit easier. Thanks again for joining us today, Dr. Chowdhury. It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll see everyone else again next week on Memcast.